There you will have the opportunity to see some things that will interest you and to learn the importance of water in our transition settlement. My curiosity roused, I gladly accepted the invitation. When we arrived at the corner of the public square, my kind friend stopped. "Here we wait for the Airbus," he said. Footnote: this was in an aerial vehicle similar to our large cable cars. I had scarcely gotten over my surprise when a large vehicle approached, floating about 15 feet above the ground, filled with passengers. It descended like an elevator. I looked at it closely. It was very long, like no vehicle I had ever seen on Earth. It seemed to be made of a very flexible material, and, judging from the number of antennae on its roof, I guessed that it was connected to invisible wires. Later, when visiting the large working plants of the colony's Department of Traffic and Transportation, I found that my suppositions had been right. Liza's gave me no time for my customary questioning. We climbed in, settled into comfortable seats, and the Airbus started in silence. I felt uneasy in this unusual environment, among so many strangers. We traveled at such a speed that I found it impossible to discern the details of any of the constructions that we passed. We covered a good distance, stopping briefly every 3 kilometers, until 40 minutes later Liza's informed me that we had arrived. The scenery before my eyes was of exquisite beauty. The woods were in bloom and the fresh air was filled with a gentle aroma. It was all a miracle of colors and lights. A great river wound its way leisurely between green banks sprinkled with blue flowers. The slow-moving waters, shimmering in the sun, reflected, like a crystal mirror, the many shades of blue in the sky. Wide paths cut through the woods in different directions, and at regular intervals large trees spread their friendly branches, offering areas of shade in the sun-bathed landscape. Here and there, fancifully shaped benches invited one to rest. I was simply charmed, and Liza's noticed my enthusiasm. This place is called the Water Park. It is one of the finest regions of the Astral City, and a favorite meeting place for lovers. They come here to exchange sweet vows of love and fidelity for their future experiences on Earth. These remarks brought a series of interesting questions to my mind, but Liza's gave me no chance to vent my eager curiosity. Pointing to a large and imposing building, he explained, "That is the colony's waterworks. The waters of the Blue River that you see over there are drawn into huge compartments from which they are distributed to every district in the colony. Beyond the grounds of the Ministry of Regeneration, the waters converge again. The river then flows along its ordinary course towards the great ocean of substances, invisible to the earth. As a matter of fact, water here has quite a different density than that on earth. It is much lighter and purer here, almost fluidical." Noticing the magnificent building in front of us, I asked, "Which ministry controls the distribution of water?" "It is one of the rare material activities under the Ministry of Divine Union." "Really?" I exclaimed, at a loss for how to reconcile the two. Liza smiled and continued with his explanation. "On Earth, very few people recognize the importance of water. Here in the Astral City our attitude is different and our knowledge of the subject is far greater. It is obvious that all services that are created need energy and attention to remain in good order. In this spiritual city we learn to be grateful to the Father and His divine laborers for such a gift. Being more deeply acquainted with the properties of water, we know that it is one of the most powerful vehicles for all fluids, whatever their nature. Here, water is used especially for nutritive and medicinal purposes. In the Ministry of Assistance, you will find several departments entirely devoted to mixing pure water with certain elements drawn from solar rays and from spiritual magnetism. In most districts of our extensive colony, the water thus prepared is the basis of our diet. It happens, though, that, of all of us, the ministers of Divine Union have reached the highest degree of spiritualization. Consequently, they were allotted the task of the general magnetization of the water of the Blue River, to purify it enough so that it might be used by all of the inhabitants of the Astral City. After the ministers of Divine Union cleanse the water, various institutions carry out the specialized work of endowing it with nutritive and medicinal substances. When the different ducts join again at a distant point opposite these woods, the river flows away from our area, bearing some of our spiritual qualities. I was completely astonished in the face of these explanations. On earth, I remarked, I never heard of anything like this. Man is inattentive. Lysus continued, for many centuries the sea has kept his environment in balance, rain has supplied him with food, and the rivers have been vital in the formation of his cities. Water is a blessing in his home at work, and is the principal and most important element in his physical body. Yet man goes on thinking himself the absolute master of his world, forgetting that he is, before any other consideration, a child of the Most High. The time will come, though, when he will follow our example and recognize the value of this divine and precious gift. He will understand that the water in every home absorbs the mental characteristics of its inhabitants. In the physical world, my friend, not only does water carry away the residues of material bodies, but it also becomes impregnated with our mental vibrations. It can be harmful in wicked hands, useful in generous ones. When in motion, the current spreads the blessing of life and acts as a vehicle of divine providence, absorbing man's bitterness, hatred and worries, cleansing his physical home and purifying his inner atmosphere. Lysus fell into reverent silence, while I gazed at the tranquil waters that had aroused in my mind so many sublime thoughts. Chapter 11, Learning About the Astral City. My generous friend was anxious to show me around the numerous districts of the colony, but pressing duties called him back. You will soon get a chance to visit the different departments of our activities, he said, encouragingly. You see, the ministries of the city are vast centers of intense work. A thorough inspection of any one of them would take several days. However, you will not lack opportunities. Even if I find it impossible to accompany you, through Clarence's mediation you will be granted a permit to visit any department you like. By this time we were back at the Airbus and in a few minutes we were on our way home. I did not feel again the sensation of uneasiness I had at first experienced, nor was I constrained by the presence of the numerous passengers in the Airbus. I was almost at ease and fell to pondering over some of the questions I was anxious to solve. I took the opportunity to question Lysus further. Lysus, my friend, can you tell me whether all spirit colonies are like this one? Do they adopt the same characteristics? By no means. If, on the physical sphere, each region, each town presents its own peculiar features, you can imagine the diversity of conditions existing on our planes. Here, as on Earth, creatures are grouped according to the common sources of their origin and the Golem view. But it must be remembered that each colony, as well as each of us, stands on a different step of the great stairway to perfection. Collective experiences vary among one another. We are only one example of such colonies. According to our chronicles, our predecessors often sought inspiration in the work of the devoted workers of other spheres, just as settlements in formation now seek our help. Nevertheless, each organization possesses essentially unique characteristics. As a longer pause in the conversation ensued, I inquired, and did the idea of the division into ministries originate here? Yes, it did. The pioneers of the Astral City visited New Dawn, one of the most important spirit colonies near us where activities are distributed into departments. Our founder adopted the system, but substituted the word ministry for department, except in the case of the Ministry of Regeneration, which only obtained its promotion under our present governor. Their idea was that the organization into ministries is more meaningful in a spiritual sense. I quite agree. I assented. It is important, Lysus continued, that you realize that our colony strongly stresses the principles of order and hierarchy. Merit is the only standard used to evaluate those who may be assigned to prominent positions. In 10 years, only 4 spirit entities have been granted missions of responsibility in the Ministry of Divine Union. As a rule, after long periods of apprenticeship and service, we reincarnate to continue our struggle towards perfection. I was completely absorbed in Liza's words, and he went on, when newcomers arrive showing response to brotherly cooperation, they are lodged in a district of the Ministry of Assistance. If, however, they are recalcitrant, they are taken to the Ministry of Regeneration. As they begin, in time, to improve, They are then admitted as helpers in the services of assistance, communication, and elucidation, in order to prepare themselves for their future tasks on earth. Only a few spirits are allowed the privilege of long stay in the ministry of elevation, and very rare indeed are those who are raised to the staff of the ministry of divine union when positions become available every 10 years. Let me tell you, the acquisitions required are no mere expressions of idealistic activity. We are no longer on the physical plane, where discarnate entities are obliged to become ghosts. Our time here is spent in the round of active work. The work in the ministry of assistance is difficult and complex. In regeneration it requires strenuous efforts, in communication it demands a high standard of individual responsibility, in elucidation it calls for a great working capacity and a well-trained mind, while in elevation, abnegation and spiritual enlightenment are indispensable. As to the missions of the Ministry of Divine Union, profound wisdom and sincere universal love are essential requisites. The government, in its turn, is the busy center of all administrative activities, and numerous services are under its direct control, including nutrition, distribution of electrical energies, traffic and transportation. In truth, my friend, labor regulations are always fulfilled here. Rest, on the other hand, is also rigorously observed. This is necessary in order to ensure that tasks are fairly distributed. The only exception is the governor himself, who works ceaselessly, even during leisure hours. But does he never leave the government house? I inquired. Only when truly necessary for the public welfare. The one exception is his Sunday visit to the Ministry of Regeneration, the zone which contains the largest number of deranged entities because so many of the spirits there are still attuned with their unhappy brothers in the lower zones. Vast multitudes of transgressor spirits are lodged there. Thus, on Sundays, after the collective prayer in the great temple of the government house, our governor spends the afternoon working with the ministries of regeneration on many difficult cases. He sacrifices much to assist our distraught and suffering brothers. We left the Airbus near the hospital where, I thought gratefully, I would soon find my comfortable room. As we walked, I noticed beautiful music floating through the air. I had first heard the melodies on leaving, and now as we returned, I looked to Lysis for an explanation. That music comes from our workshops. After long observation, the government came to the conclusion that music stimulates labor. Since then, that inspiring incentive has become an established custom in all of our activities. Meanwhile, we had reached the hospital entrance hall. An attendant came forward and addressed my companion, Brother Lysis. You are urgently needed in the pavilion on my right. My friend left with his usual efficient calmness, while I retired to the privacy of my room, once more to return to endless speculations. Chapter 12, The Lower Zone. After having received such precious elucidations, I felt most anxious to improve my knowledge of some of the facts he had told me about. His references to spirits in the shadowy lower zones aroused my curiosity. The lack of religious instruction on earth is very often the cause of a serious state of confusion over here. What could a lower zone be? I had heard hell and purgatory mentioned in the Roman Catholic sermons I had attended out of social obligation, but I never had the slightest notion of the lower zone. The next time I met my amiable attendant, I had all of my questions at my fingertips. He listened carefully, then replied, "Well now, how can you be unaware of that region when you were kept there for so long?" With a shudder of horror, I recalled my past sufferings. Lysis continued, "The lower zone begins on the earth's crust. It is the shadowy zone for those who, in the world, turned a deaf ear to the call of their sacred duties, which they failed to fulfill, languishing instead in indecision or dragging themselves into the mire of wrongdoings. You see, on reincarnating, a spirit promises to carry out the mission assigned to him in the Father's work. Yet, when he recommences his experiences, he finds it very difficult to keep his word. Instead, he blindly follows the dictates of his own selfishness. Thus, he continues to cultivate old hates and passions, forgetting that hatred is not justice, just as passion is not love. All that is superfluous and useless unbalances the harmony of life. After physical death, Great multitudes of obsessed entities remain in that misty region adjacent to the Earth's physical sphere. A well-accomplished duty serves as a gateway through which we enter the infinite. It brings us closer towards our goal, the sacred union with the Lord. It is natural, then, that one who neglects the tasks allotted to him should have that blessing indefinitely postponed. Lysus perceived my difficulty in grasping the full meaning of the lesson, owing to my almost total ignorance of spiritual principles, and tried to make it more objective. Now, suppose that each of us returns to the earth wearing filthy clothing in order to wash it in the waters of human life. Our dirty garment is our spirit body, molded by our own hands in past lives. Although we are granted the blessing of a new opportunity on earth, we generally forget our essential aim. Instead of cleansing ourselves through constructive efforts, we acquire even more stains, we incur heavier debts and imprison ourselves through our own actions. We return to the world to rid ourselves of our impurities, knowing that they were utterly inconsistent with the higher spheres. How, then, can we expect to enter those luminous spheres in an even worse condition? The lower zone is a place where negative mental residues are destroyed. It is a sort of purgatory, where the refuse of the illusions acquired by neglecting the sublime opportunity of an earthly life is gradually burned away. The image could not have been clearer or more convincing. I was simply lost in amazement. Isis, perceiving how useful these explanations could be to me, went on, the lower zone should be a region of great interest to those still on the physical plane, for it contains everything which is out of tune with the higher plane. Consider how wise divine providence was in allowing the creation of such a plane around earth. There we find compact legions of irresolute and ignorant souls, not wicked enough to be relegated to colonies of harder expiation, nor sufficiently virtuous to be admitted to higher planes. Those countless inhabitants of the lower zone are close companions to incarnate men, separated from them only by vibratory laws. It is no wonder, then, that such places are characterized by serious disturbances. There, rebellious spirits of all kinds are grouped together, forming invisible nuclei of extraordinary power, owing to the concentration of their common tendencies and desires. Many people on earth become desperate when the postman doesn't turn up, or when the train is late. The lower zone is full of such desperate creatures, who, after physical death, are disappointed at not finding the Lord ready to satisfy their every whim. When they realize that the crown of glory and eternal life are awarded only to those who have worked with the Father, they show themselves as they truly are, wasting precious time on petty deeds in the lower zone. Just as in the astral city, entities in the lower zone form a spiritual community, but their community is peopled with many different types of frustrated, idle and perverse entities. It is the threshold, a zone of tyranny and bondage, of exploiters and exploited. Lysis stopped, but I, greatly impressed, went on questioning, but how do you account for this state of things? Do these spirits have no defense, no organization? Organization, Lysis proceeded with a smile, is an attribute of organized spirits. You see, the lower zone to which we are referring is like a home where there is no bread. Everybody complains and no one is right. The absent-minded traveler will miss his train, the farmer who does not sow cannot reap. However, of one thing you can be sure, even in the shadows and ordeals of the lower zone, divine protection never fails its inhabitants. Each spirit remains there just the necessary time, no more, no less. And in order to carry out the work of spirit care in the lower zones, the Lord has permitted the establishment of several settlements such as ours. I suppose then, I remarked, that the lower zone must be in close connection with the incarnate plane, even a kind of continuation of it? So it is, he agreed, and you will see there the net of invisible wires connecting it to human minds. It is peopled with disincarnated entities and the thought forms of those still on earth. Every spirit, wherever it may be, is a nucleus of radiating forces which can create, transform or destroy, manifesting as vibrations that earth science cannot yet understand. Thus, whoever is thinking is emitting positive or negative forces, and is, consequently, constructing or destroying something somewhere. It is by means of those mental currents that men establish connection with entities in the lower zone whose tendencies are in accordance with their own, because every soul is a powerful magnet. You see, then, that an invisible army is at work behind the invisible one. The most strenuous missions in the lower zone are assigned to devoted helpers of the Ministry of Assistance. If a fireman's work in the great cities of Earth is exhausting and dangerous because of the blazing flames and clouds of smoke he has to fight, no lighter is the missionary's task in the lower zone. These missionaries have to withstand heavy fluids emitted by thousands of minds obsessed in the practice of evil, or terribly chastised by redeeming ordeals. I tell you, my friend, a great deal of courage and a superior capacity for self-sacrifice are necessary to be able to help those who are still unable to understand and appreciate the assistance offered them. As Liza's paused once more, I exclaimed, "Oh, how would I like to work to help those unhappy creatures, to offer them the spiritual bread of enlightenment." My friendly attendant looked at me kindly, and after a few moments of reflection, took his leave with his parting remark. I wonder whether you feel duly prepared for such a mission. Chapter 13, with the Minister of Assistance. As I gradually became stronger, I began to feel again the need for activity and work. Now that those difficult years of distress were over, I longed to begin again the round of occupations which, in the world, generally comprise a regular working day. I fully realized that I had missed excellent opportunities on Earth and that my physical life had been spent along the wrong path. But, on recalling my 15 years of medical practice, I experienced a sense of emptiness in my heart. I saw myself as a strong farmer standing in the middle of a field, hands tied, unable to work. Here I was, surrounded by patients, yet not allowed, as before, to approach their beds as their friend, doctor and scientist. Incessant hem-zero-ing from neighboring rooms reached my ears, but I could not lend a hand, not even as a humble member of the nursing or first aid staff. On the physical plane it was a matter of studying the regular books plus some necessary training and one could acquire the rights of a qualified physician. But here, in my new surroundings, spirit doctors employ different methods, their chief textbooks being their own hearts, and their basic treatment, brotherly care and love. Even the humblest of nursing attendants in the astral city possessed far greater knowledge and possibilities than I, with all my science. Consequently, much as I longed for some occupation, I feared that, at least for the time being, any attempt on my part to apply for work would amount to an encroachment upon the rights of others. Faced with such difficulties, I turned to Lysus as a brother. In reply to my doubts and hesitations, he suggested, "Why not asking Clarence? He never fails to ask about you, and is sure to do his best on your behalf. Go and ask him for advice and assistance." I took the necessary steps to obtain an appointment with my generous benefactor, and was told that he would not be able to see me until the next morning, when I was to go to his private office. I waited anxiously for the coming interview, and very early the following day I made my way to the appointed place. To my great surprise, I found three other people already waiting for him. The kind minister had arrived early, long before us, and was seeing to matters even more important than attending to visitors and petitioners. After finishing his most urgent work, the minister had us shown in, two by two. I was surprised at this manner of holding an audience, but was told later that the measure was adopted so that the solution of one case might profit not only the party involved, but also the others present, thus serving the common well-being as well as saving time. After several minutes had passed, I was admitted along with an elderly lady who was to be heard first. The minister welcomed us cordially, putting us at ease to present our requests. "Worthy Clarence," began my unknown companion, "I have come to beg your intercession on behalf of my two sons. I can't bear to be separated from them any longer. Moreover, I have been informed that they are leading difficult lives on Earth, with no end to their tribulations. I realize that our Father's designs are loving and just, yet as a mother I can't help worrying and being anxious." The poor creature broke down and wept bitterly. Clarence looked at her with sympathy and kindness, but replied firmly, "But sister, if you agree that our Father's designs are holy and just, what is left for me to do? I should like to be granted the means of protecting my sons on earth myself," replied the afflicted mother. "Alas, my friend," exclaimed Clarence, "in order to protect others, one must have grown in the spirit of humility and service. What would you think of a man who, anxious to provide for his little children, remained comfortably at home? Service and cooperation are laws created by the Father, and no one may break them without causing himself serious damage. Has your conscience nothing to say on this point? How many bonuses can you present to justify your demand?" This was a note by André Louise. An hour bonus is a convention created to account for each hour of service performed on behalf of the community. The anxious mother, thus addressed, answered hesitantly, 304. "It is a pity," continued Clarence, smiling, "that you should have been lodged here for over 6 years and should have given the colony only 304 hours of work. Yet, as soon as you recovered from your trials in the lower regions, I offered you a meritorious occupation in the vigilance patrols of the Ministry of Communication. But that was intolerable work," she interrupted, "an incessant struggle against malevolent entities. You couldn't expect me to adapt to it?" Clarence went on, unperturbed. "After that I found you a place with the Brothers of Support, for redeeming service. Worse still," she protested, "those chambers are always crowded with filthy creatures. I couldn't stand their swearing, their immorality, the squalor. Realizing your difficulties," continued the minister, "I sent you to cooperate in the ward of mentally disturbed entities. But can anybody but saints put up with them?" inquired the rebellious petitioner. "I really did my best, but the multitude of raving souls is enough to scare anybody. My efforts did not stop there," proceeded our patient benefactor calmly. "I then placed you in the investigation and research department of the Ministry of Elucidation. But, you, sister, probably impatient at my unwelcome interest, deliberately retired to the Park of Repose. I found that place unbearable," explained the querulous matron. "I couldn't possibly endure the atmosphere of strange fluids, exhausting experiments and harsh supervisors. Remember, my friend," resumed the devoted and enlightened minister, "that assistance has two inseparable companions, service and humility. In order to help others you must first obtain the collaboration of benefactors, friends and servants. Before being able to render assistance to those we love, it is essential that we establish currents of sympathy, without which no efficient aid is possible. The peasant who tills the soil earns the gratitude of those who enjoy the harvest. The workman who satisfies exacting superintendents, carrying out their orders scrupulously, is providing nourishment for his family. The servant who obeys in the spirit of cooperation, wins the goodwill of his master, his companions, and all those interested in his work. So you see, no average administrator can ever be useful to his loved ones if he has not yet learned how to obey and serve worthily. Let everybody keep in mind that all useful service belongs, above all, to the universal giver, and that it must be carried out no matter what difficulties or suffering it may cost." After a short pause, he resumed. "What, then, would you do on earth, if you have not yet learned how to withstand here? I do not doubt your devotion to your sons, but as it is, you would arrive there as a paralytic mother, incapable of rendering any efficient assistance. To deserve the joy of helping loved ones we must enlist the goodwill of many of our brothers, whom we, in turn, have helped. If you give no cooperation, you cannot expect to receive any. That is the law. And if you, my sister, possess nothing of your own to give, you will have to turn to others for voluntary contribution. But how will you obtain it, when you have not sown anything, not even good feelings? Go back, then, to the Park of Repose, where you have been lodging lately, and give the subject serious attention. We shall take it up again." The disappointed woman sat down, drying her tears. The minister then looked at me and said, kindly, "Your turn, my friend." I rose hesitantly and approached him to present my request. Chapter 14. Clarence explains. As I stood there, my heart pounding, I felt like a diffident student about to face a strict examining board. Disconcerted by the sight of that woman in tears, and awed by the minister's serene authority, I trembled in my shoes, regretting having sought the interview. Would it have been better to have held my peace and waited patiently for superior deliberations? Would it be presuming too much to apply for medical duties in a hospital where I was a patient? I wished that I could retreat hurriedly to my room and forget all about yesterday's aspirations. But that was quite out of the question now.